Hello and welcome to the Ask Weldon Show, episode 255. Today's topics are, how do I preserve skill during a vacation? Do other regions influence the meta in NALCS? And does NoFap affect your League of Legends skill? So that's a boy question, but also a girl question. I have data relevant to females also about NoFap. Anyway, let's jump into it. I don't have any announcements before the show starts, so we'll go on to question number one from Nathan.
Hey, Weldon. My name's Nathan, and I play a 5v5 team arcade game called Killer Queen competitively. It is a arcade game, and you can only play it in person in bars. At the end of August, I have a tournament coming up, but between now and then, I'll be spending a lot of time in Europe. I'll get back into the States with only a week before the tournament, and I'm afraid that I'll get rusty. Some things that I'll have on my trip, I'll have access to watch VODs. I can message my teammates. And I do even have a loose arcade button that I could just practice tapping on. So I'm wondering, what can I do to make sure that I'm not rusty when I get back?
All right, Nathan, thank you very much for the question. So first of all, I recommend everybody go search Killer Queen Arcade eSport or Killer Queen Arcade on YouTube and just or on the internet and check it out. It seems to be a really cool game and a really cool concept. I imagine it's taking over a lot of different trivia nights at bars and stuff like that. So try to find out where you can play it locally, get your team together and start doing this new eSport, because I think definitely live arcade eSport is going to be a thing. And it looks really fun. So directly to answer your question, Nathan, there's not much that you can do in terms of mechanical preservation if you're not playing the actual game in a situation like this, because you don't have a ball, like a soccer ball you can bring with you and kick around that would be similar to what you're doing on the soccer pitch. So I would recommend instead to focus on not doing anything mechanically related to the game and letting that kind of decay, and make sure when you get back that you have very, very high quality mechanical focus for the first couple days that you're back, because you have an opportunity here. Every single time that you let habits kind of die away, you have a chance to relearn them while preserving the good things and getting rid of the bad things. So if you had a certain animation cancel that you were working on, or a certain thing that you're bad at, or a certain thing that you're good at, when you go back to the game, have a strategic approach to really high quality training for the first few days that you're back, and make sure that you're laying down a sort of groundwork for leveling up, because you're going to have the opportunity to essentially change things that are very hard for you to change if you're practicing every day. If you're trying to change your tennis serve and you're doing it within the season, you're not going to be able to pull it off. This is an off-season change, because you need to get worse, and then you need to rest, and you need to let your brain forget habits, and you need to build it up from the ground again, fundamentals. So this is an opportunity for you to hit up fundamentals by resting them and letting your brain forget a little bit of the programming. Okay, then strategically, I would say just spend a lot of time thinking about the game and leadership and the comms. Maybe I think one of the best things that you could possibly do is review old game footage of your team and the communication that you did. So if you can listen to how the comms went, and you can listen to look at the coordination of the team, and you can see some of the holes that you guys had, that's one of the best ways to kind of have a fresh look at drastic ways of improving the team while you're apart from it and when you're not practicing. So instead of innovating new things that then you would have to learn as a team, it's better for you to identify errors that you guys are making that would be really simple and easy to fix, that are kind of general and would apply to your team specifically, because you know that you already do them, and they would be easy to change if somebody just decided to not do them anymore. So that's kind of what I would do, is say tape review. Also studying your opponents and learning their tendencies and strategies and putting it together in a little scouting sheet or something like that, if you have that ability to do that. Otherwise, I would just say, general arcade skills, probably the most transferable thing, to be honest. So if you have a game that's really similar to like a 2D scroller, then it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing to practice 2D scrolling in an arcade somewhere in Europe. So give that a shot. Thanks for the question. It was really interesting, and I hope that everybody goes and checks out Queen Killer Queen Arcade. Queen Killer. Okay. Anyway, it's awesome. Okay, announcements. So big announcements for the day are that people are paying attention again to the course, which is great. I'm going to start trying to spruce up the website a little bit. And because of the sales, the first thing I'm going to do is try to get the new design onto the blog and the website. So essentially, I'm working on three different things right now. I'm working on saving up for the last spurt of programming for the app. I'm working on the content that's in the app, that is like planning it and recording it. And I'm working on sprucing up the actual website, the WordPress website, which is going to be the shopping cart / blog, which it is now already. And it also happens to have the course right now. So that design needs to be paid for. And I think that we've almost saved up enough money to actually do that. So that's the first thing that I'm going to do. And there's this guy named Sean Burtis in Minneapolis that I used last time. So I'm going to see if he's free again because he was the original website and it was really dope. So now that I have a new style guide, like that's what I'm going to do. So thank you for all the support. Appreciate it. Keep it up. Spread the word. Buy the Mac program and let's get this thing on the road. Okay. Question number two from Christian.
Hello, Weldon. My name is Christian, and I was just wondering if CLG's team compositions and picks are at all influenced by different regional metas, you know, as in LPL, LEC, even LCK to some extent. I was just wondering if those metas and those leagues and the strong picks in between their champions, if at all, influence CLG's own drafting process and own decisions on whether or not certain picks are good here and now.
All right, so inter-regional metas don't really affect each other until there's an international tournament and the meta is determined by the teams that are scrimming against each other. Metas are usually transferred through scrimmages and a little bit through stage if you have best of series. And each team has a different style within the meta because they navigate the different, like some teams like the blind pick, some teams like the counter pick, some teams give the counter pick to their top laner, some to their mid laner, some give them to the AD carry, some give them to the support, some have blindable junglers, some don't have blindable junglers. Like it's dependent completely on your team's color. And so the way that it works mostly is that players have other players they look up to and they copy their picks and they bring them and they try to make them work here. And if they do, then it becomes a part of the meta. And if they don't, then it doesn't. And there's a lot of picks that are meta warping. So they just kind of like set the meta. If a teams are good at them and they stick with them, then they warp everybody else's meta to be rock, paper, scissors. So essentially like the meta in League of Legends is everybody just plays the best champions, but also the best teams who are winning, everybody has to play the champions that are good or bad, or like that are good kind of with those champions or into those champions. So if teams are not good enough to pull off truly meta champions that are actually the best champions in an area, then what happens is you end up playing with a bunch of niche picks against a bunch of other niche picks. This is actually what happens in Academy a lot. I see a lot of interesting niche picks in Academy that people like are able to pick and pull off because other people don't know how to play against them and how to punish them and can't be flexible enough in draft to like brutalize a random blind pick of a quote unquote bad champion. But then at the LCS level, when playing against a good team, if you blind a bad champion, the other team will just punish it and you'll lose horribly. So this has happened to us, to CLG, a couple times in the spring split, and we couldn't punish it, which is very sad because that means you're not a good team. But it's also happened to us a couple times in the spring split where teams brazenly blinded bad champions or picked bad champions against us, and we drafted to punish it and then actually succeeded. So I think that it depends a lot on the quality of the teams in the region, on the players which players they're fans of, and then what the strongest teams in the region are able to pull off and play or allowed to play and how other teams can punish them or not for playing that. And then that kind of like warps the meta. But no, generally speaking, the meta is set by scrimmages within the region it is and only influenced through personal preference of people stealing picks from their idols or the people that they respect. That's kind of what it comes down to. So, yeah, I would say not as much as people think, because it's not as easy to transfer stuff from one meta to another as it's perceived to be on the outside. But yeah, really good question. Okay. The MAC program. I mentioned this before during the announcements. This is my online mindfulness acceptance commitment training video course that you purchase once and then log into. And then there's 49 videos, 7 weeks, 7 days. Each video is a lecture and then a meditation, seated meditation training. This is the same kind of content that I worked through basically with CLG back in 2015, with TSM shortly after that, with G2 when I was in Europe, kind of, not as much as with TSM and with CLG, and then again with this squad of CLG about halfway through, kind of like the core concepts contained within the MAC program. And it's basically about performance psychology. It's a program where you learn the precepts and the basic fundamentals of performance psychology in an applied setting, not like so you can be a performance psychology trainer, but so that you can perform. And people have messaged me a lot about this program and said that it's helped them with performance in esport, obviously, amateur usually, although there have been a couple pros that have taken the program and then gone pro. As well as people for studying, for music, for law, and I'm trying to think of some of the other more fun ones. This has been a bunch. Just trying to list some of the fun ones. Can't think of any more off the top of my head. But anyway, I'm currently... I just finished transferring this to the United States. So it was set up as a Finnish business. And it was down for a while. Now it's back up. And I'm trying to make it into an app. So basically any and all proceeds from the sales of this go toward the programming. I've already sunk a lot of money into it in 2018. And it's about 80% finished. Programming is on hold right now while we like save up for the next to make sure that we can like finish it in one go before I hire a developer, and then we'll finish the app and it'll be like an online app instead of an online course or one that you can put on your phones or whatever. So that's what I'm hoping to do, and so that's what's going on there, and you can check it out at mindgames.gg. Okay, last question of the show, and that's my sponsor. It's me. I don't have a sponsor. So yeah, if you want to do the thing that you would do if Pepsi were sponsoring me, instead of buying a Pepsi, you just buy the MAC program. And it's like, anyway, okay, last question from Ryan.
Hi, Weldon. It's not LS here, and I've had Ryan, my mind on like LS, the NoFap challenge. LS.
This is the guy who has the LS sounding voice, and I was like, wow, you sound a lot like Nick, but then it's not actually Nick. So anyway.
Hi, Weldon. It's not LS here, and I've had my mind on the NoFap challenge. Nick. It seems as if a challenge could help improve your willpower, but at the same time, it feels like willpower is a fairly limited resource that you might need for your performance life. How do you think a challenge like this might affect a performance athlete during the season versus during like the off season? And how might their perspective or their reasoning or motivation behind doing the challenge affect this?
All right. Ryan, thank you for the question. So I've been asked this question by almost every single team that I've been a part of, whether or not masturbation affects performance or not, and whether or not like not masturbating can improve performance. And there has been some research on this. And by some research, I mean like I could find, when I looked, like 4 to 5 studies. And most of them are looking at sex, not masturbation. And I would say all of them, actually. I didn't find any studies at all about masturbation, but I did find studies about sex before performance. And the basic finding was no finding. So there's no effect size. There's no predictive ability of whether or not you have sex before a match. There's no predictive ability of that act on the outcome of the match. And this was done in individual sport, obviously, because in team sport, it's almost impossible to measure the impact of performance. Hey, Gainley. Have a good night. But the best finding, the most clear-cut study and the best finding was done at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics in 2016. and it was done with a number of athletes, and it was done at the Olympics because there's a lot of athletes that have sex at the Olympics, and so it's a lot easier to study there. And the general finding was that male athletes, the impact on performance is non-measurable, meaning that there's no increase or decrease, which what it really means is that when they measured a ton of different athletes, on average, they found no increase or decrease. But at the individual level, I'm sure that some people placeboed either up or nocebo'd down, right? So they either had a better day because they had sex, or they or a better performance, or they didn't have as good a performance because they had sex. So like on the individual level, you should know what works best for you. But on the scientific level, there was no connection. Does that make sense? Does everybody understand how this works statistically? Like you can have like an average distribution that's like zero effect, right? But for one person, it can be a plus five, and another person, it's a negative five, right? So what that means is like, it's basically just whatever you think, essentially. If you think it hurts you, it probably hurts you. If you think it helps you, it probably helps you. All right, so then the study, but then the impact on females, there was a significant increase in performance. And when I say significant, I don't mean large. I mean measurable, right? There's insignificant and significant. Insignificant means basically nothing. Significant means like, oh, there were enough people that reported it that like a 0.1% increase that like we can say certifiably that there's a 0.1%. It doesn't mean that there's a huge increase. It means it's a significant one statistically, meaning that it's reportable. So anyway, what they theorize with is it's psychological. That basically, like the sensation that female athletes report getting from sex is like a feeling of power and a feeling of like control and strength, and that that then impacts their psychological framework for competition in a net positive way, so that they're more likely to succeed on the following day for the performance. So this is all done like day before, sex day before, not like sex day of. And yeah, that's the only finding. That's it. Other than that, basically the studies didn't find anything. And some of them were pretty much with only male athletes. This was one of the bi-gender studies. And there doesn't appear to be any physical... like physical basis for anything in terms of performance improvement, and any performance improvement that is found seems to be with women and seems to be psychological framework related in terms of like empowerment and feeling strong and that carrying that like boldness over into the competition because of it. So yeah, there you go. Now to answer your direct question, which is it takes willpower to do nofap. So will I expend willpower if I do a nofap like week, and will that negatively impact the game and my concentration and my focus? The answer is, of course, you have this like amount of willpower that you have, and you're using up a bunch of it, and you're going to have less to expend somewhere else. But willpower is this tricky thing where it's kind of like infinite if you want it to be, and limited if you are believing that it's limited, or if you don't have a lot, or if you're not getting a lot of sleep and stuff. So this is kind of like an individual question. If you are like a baby and can't do two things at once and like can't handle not eating your sugar cookie in the day and it makes you cranky if you don't get your hot bottle of milk, then maybe you can't do this. But if you're an adult and you just tolerate discomfort and you try hard when things get hard and you try harder when things get even harder, then it probably doesn't really matter all that much that you're a little low on willpower. You can just be motivated anyway if you choose to be. So it just depends on your personal, like your ability to tolerate and your levels of tolerance. So yeah, that's the show for today. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Make sure to check out the show on twitch.tv/mindgamesweldon. Turn on notifications, open it up in your phone app and follow, and then click notifications so that you know when I go live. Because like I said, this is like a 30-minute show. The stream is like 45 minutes long, almost usually max. I take questions before the show. I take questions after the show, and then otherwise I just am recording it for YouTube. Make sure to check out the Mac program, mindgames.gg. Use the code AskWeldon to get the $5 discount and show that you came from YouTube. And yeah, otherwise, have a good week. I will see you guys tomorrow.